Welcome back, everyone, to the Crypto 101 podcast. It is Pizza Mind here, and I am joined today by Harsh Rajat, the CEO and co-founder of Push Protocol. Harsh, welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast. How are you doing over there?
Hey, Pizza Mind. I'm doing great. I'm really excited to be here.
And we're really excited to have you. It's 10:30 p.m. in the evening where you're at in Mumbai right now. And I said thank you earlier off the air, you know, for staying up late for us. And your comment to that was, it's crypto. Crypto never sleeps. You know, we're, work time is all day, every day, whenever the opportunity arises. What was life like, you know, before you got into crypto? And what made you want to adopt this crazy lifestyle?
God, so you mean what was life when I had Web2 friends? And family.
Yeah, regular friends and family and hobbies.
Yes. So yeah, life, I mean, the reason I took the jump, I think most of us have the same story. Mine happened in 2014, heard about Bitcoin. It was going to $1,000. It was all the rage in India at that point of time, like Bitcoin, there's this new tech that is going to $1,000. So of course I thought let me get some of it. And the moment I bought it, within a week, it was back to $200. So yeah, buy high, sell low. That was my strategy. But, but what it helped me see was it got me excited about what is Bitcoin, because, you know, I had a loss, so I had to go through I had to see how to get it back. So yeah, trading is how I started getting into crypto. But when I started trading, I realized that, you know, there's not just Bitcoin, there's Ethereum as well, and there's so many other coins as well. So I kind of went deep into that. Then after a couple of years, I kind of realized that, oh, you don't just trade these coins. Some of these coins, you are able to program them as well. And I've been an entrepreneur from 2010. I've been a mobile entrepreneur. I saw notifications, communications, and everything evolving over there. So yeah, when I got to know that you can program on this blockchain as well, and because of my experience, I decided that communication is probably the best thing in which I can get in. And that's how I started going into Web3.
That's fantastic. Give us the high level of what you're building over there at Push Protocol. What problem is it solving?
Got it. So, I mean, if you just think about it, what is the first thing that we do when we get up in the morning? Most of us, we probably have a look at our phone and we see all the notifications from all the things that we are doing, whether it's important email or Slack. Whether it's anything about social media, whether it's any...
Letting me know I need to turn off the World Cup because I have a podcast in 2 minutes.
Yes. So all of these things, even something like chat, when we are doing something as personal as chat, what we are doing is we are chatting to our friends, but via notifications, right? So that is exactly the thing that drives the Web2 world, that drives the virtual world. But just think about it. That is just a Web2 world. When you come to Web3, when you come to blockchain, you don't have something as basic as notifications, right? So whatever you're doing, whether it's loan liquidations, whether it's any governance, whether it's even someone sending you a crypto out, there was no way for you to notify the wallet addresses, which are the usernames of Web3. And that's what Push Protocol basically was invented to do, which is basically enabling notifications for all the services of all the blockchains. So basically notifications and then communications like chat and video for the entire Web3. And that's what we did. We basically have sent over 19 million notifications now. We very recently launched on Ethereum, and now we are moving to, or we are launching on Polygon as well. And the idea is that we'll launch on all things Web3. And yeah, we are working with around 100 plus protocols, including Uniswap, DYDX, Gitcoin, Polygon, Decentraland, and any and every service that basically wants to do notifications. So in essence, what we are doing is we are building or we are bringing the Web2 experience of notifications of chat and video on Web3.
That's fantastic. And it's so necessary to have an idea of what's going on. It can't just be a one-way input if Web3 is going to take off. So great on you for building such a useful tool, allowing cross-chain messaging and all this stuff. We've seen a couple other players in the space try and do something similar. What's your approach at Push Protocol over something that maybe is trying to make something that's like super hard encrypted cross-chain messaging versus just simple notifications?
Got it. So basically what we knew, and I mean, when we started, like we started back in 2020. So the vision was always the same. Like we want to bring all sort of communications to Web3. But I think what a lot of people don't realize, like before you can build chat or before you can build video out for or these services out for users, you need to build a robust notification service or a robust decentralized notification protocol that will essentially enable these services to operate. Like when we are talking on WhatsApp, we actually are not talking on WhatsApp as much as we are talking via notifications. Even when we are doing this podcast, the Google Calendar, it basically triggered the notification out, which basically helped us reach over here. And even when we are doing video calls, we are not doing video calls. We are notifying the user that I want to basically initiate a video call to you. And then the user notifies me. And that's how these communications are established. So that is what we knew, that before you can do chat or before you can do video calls, you need to do communication or you need to do notifications. And that's why we started with notifications. And once we perfected that out, we knew that now we can build like the WhatsApp, which is basically, or we can build a FaceTime out. And that's what we did like very recently. A month or so back, we also launched a chat, but this chat is just like Web2, wherein this chat, whenever you are doing it with a wallet address, now you're getting notifications as well. So again, the same user experience of Web2 to Web3.
That's tremendous. I didn't even know about the chat and video features and stuff like that. That it almost sounds like not just competing with WhatsApp, but Zoom as well. So that's really exciting. And in terms of, you know, we've seen so much censorship in Web2 and deplatforming and cancel culture. How does your platform work in terms of all that stuff? Is it really open and anonymous for everyone to use? Is it fully encrypted? Or what are some of the risks that might be associated with using a system like what you've built?
Got it. I mean, see, the vision is like bringing communications to Web3. Or, you know, being the de facto protocol for communication, which can be anything for Web3. How does our platform works? Well, it's a decentralized communication protocol, which basically means it's a network. It's an open network, just like Ethereum, which basically helps in the Web3 adoption. It's not tied to a single app. So let me just rewind down and let me just let you know how Web3 operates, like in a very simple term. So how Ethereum operates, Ethereum basically is a network which is distributed, and anyone can run the network, and anyone who runs the network secures the network. And then you have these front ends which listen to Ethereum network and shows you your account information, right? Your pseudo, you have a wallet address, which is a pseudonymous range of letters and numbers, and that basically becomes your account, and that is where you get all your account information that allows you to interact with smart contracts and so on and so forth. Push protocol also does the same thing. Push protocol, it's basically decentralized network which is run on push nodes. We are launching push nodes very, very soon. And what it does is now whenever any notification or any sort of chat or any sort of video call comes in, these things are getting tied to the wallet address of the user. And because it's getting tied to the wallet address of the user after getting verified, and it's stored in the open network just like Ethereum, now any crypto wallet can just tap into this network and can show you all the notifications, all your chat out, no matter what sort of application you choose as your Web3 gateway. So you'll get to see the same notification and the same communication, and you can continue the communication on MetaMask if they integrate push protocol. And the same thing can happen on any other crypto wallet or any other crypto front end. When it comes to encryption, of course, while the network is open, the chat and the notification in itself, they are encrypted. Some of the notifications which are very public can be non-encrypted, but all the notifications on all the chats that you do, they have the option of getting encrypted. So it's basically wallet to wallet encrypted, end-to-end encrypted, open network communication that happens.
That's fantastic. I really love the idea of everyone in Web3, no matter which corner they're in, being able to communicate with each other. And that really is the future. Is there a token that kind of guards against spam, or do you have to pay to receive notifications or send messages? How does that work?
Got it. So yeah, we do have a token. It's called Push. It basically has four major use cases. Like the first major use case is, of course, these validator nodes that we have, which is used to secure the network. The push token is used as a proof of stake. The second major use case is that this is a live communication middleware, which basically means that it does have settings and it does have spam control and a lot of features that will be tweaked in the future. And the token basically is used to enable those sort of tweaking, because we don't want any centralized control to it. We just want to build this in as much decentralized sense as possible. The third use case is that we basically put 53% of the push tokens to push DAO. The idea is that this is a communication layer built by Web3 for Web3. And so the community should decide like what should be done with those funds and how those funds can be activated. And the fourth and the coolest use case the communication protocol has is something that we call the fee pool. Wherein whatever fees we'll charge in the future to these services who are utilizing the notifications from Push or to the super users of Push Chat, all of these fees that is collected will go directly to the protocol, and token holders, they decide like what part of that fee pool goes to what all crypto wallets that have adopted or integrated push protocol into them, making it sort of a very circular, very active economy. For users, the notifications or the chats, they are always going to be free. Push might charge some of the premium users like Telegram charges their super users in the future. And for notification also, it's going to be free. Unless you know you're sending a lot of notifications out, in that case we will be charging services. But for most part of the things, it will always be free for the users. So very much like Web2 interface and the Web2 UX.
Introducing Wondersuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the Wondersuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
That's brilliant. I think that's the biggest hurdle to overcome in Web3 is the Web2 free experience that is going to be really, really difficult to tell people, yeah, you can use exactly what you're using, but now you have to go collect 1,000 different tokens and figure out which wallet to use and take 10 minutes extra time every time you want to go visit somewhere. And by the way, like your web browser doesn't connect to any of this stuff.
Exactly. So, you have to learn to use Web3 and pay us to do that.
Yeah, exactly. So having a normal free experience, I think, is going to be the challenge for a lot of Web3 developers. It's great to hear that you've already solved that. So that's tremendous. You know, what are some of the lessons you've learned along the way since becoming a builder in this space, you know, for almost a decade now?
Got it. I mean, some of the lessons that I've learned and that I tell people, like Push started from a hackathon back in 2020. And I tell everyone, like, this is the best way you can start a project out. Because if you go to a hackathon, a couple of things happen. The first thing is, like, you might have an idea of your project. But what happens is, like, the hackathon mentors, they will know the exact tools which you can use to make the best version of your idea out, right? And that is something that you need, especially in the early stages. The second thing that happens is, like, because hackathons are judged by a lot of Web3 leaders, so your idea is put directly in front of them. And in some extent, like, including ours, we basically got judged by Mariano Conti. And later on, he basically...
One of the co-founders of MakerDAO.
Yes. And... later on, he basically became an investor in the protocol. And not only that, he became a very good friend. And because of that, we were able to tap into the experience. So that is one thing which I'll tell all the builders to do. The other thing I tell the builders to do is be shameless in asking questions. A lot of times we think that my question is maybe stupid and I should not ask. But yeah, no question is stupid. I kind of was scared in asking these things out when I started because I thought, again, I might look dumb, but it isn't the case anytime. Or it isn't the case when people are nice or when people are good. And the Ethereum community overall is really, really awesome. And yeah, the third thing I tell builders is that don't be afraid in asking for help. Like we did that. And because of that, we got like when we launched our early idea out, we got responses from Kevin Owaki. We got responses from Dan Finlay, even from The Graph. And that basically motivated us. And it also these people also started helping us out to realize what we are building and how to build it right or how to pitch right or how to form the community, right? And so on and so forth. And I think we have asked for help from over 100 or so Web3 leaders. And most of them, they basically helped us out. And that's why we are here. So that's my advice to all the builders that are coming into this space.
That's so inspirational. I mean, I always wanted to be a builder, but I made a decision at 16 years old that I didn't want to learn how to code. Because all my friends were learning C++ that time, and they're just tearing their hair out. And I said, okay, none for me.
Rightly.
But, you know, you mentioned, you know, there's so many developer tools now. It's not just coding every last little thing in Notepad++ anymore. If I were to go to a hackathon with some good ideas but no coding skills, you know, is that something that normal people do and they just meet up with other developers and, like, teams form? Or does everyone go in there with their own idea of what to build in their own teams already?
Got it. It's definitely the first one. So you don't have to, like, a lot of people have this misconception that a hackathon means that you have to be a hardcore coder, but that's not really the case. It's not uncommon to see people who are good at marketing or who have an idea and are looking for technical founders or co-founders to build this out in the hackathon. And you can do both. Like, if you're a hardcore developer, you can basically go and build this out on your own. But hackathons, they usually recommend you form a team. And there's a reason for that. Like, if you're doing it as a hobby, it works if you want to do it like single-handedly. But if you want this idea to become a startup in the future, you don't really need just technical expertise. You definitely need people who can market. You definitely need people who can build communities. You definitely need people who can do operations. And so many other things as well, right? So it doesn't matter who you are. You can definitely go, you can form your team, and you can execute your idea. You don't have to code. You can be good in marketing. You can just have a great idea. You can go to hackathon, form a team, and take it forward from there.
That's so amazing. I'm definitely going to go now. What are some of the best hackathons to attend? Should I start in like something that's local to my area, or are there like a big three or four across the world that are a better use of time to attend?
I mean, because I started from ETH Global, I'm going to give a shout out to them. Like, they're the best hackathons. Not only me, like Vanens has started from ETH Global as well. So a lot of cool projects have started from ETH Global. In terms of doing it locally or doing it online, so ETH Global has these online versions of the hackathon, wherein if you're not able to make it to, let's say, a venue, you can do it online as well. And apart from that, ETH Global constantly organizes hackathons across all over the countries. For example, in 10 days, ETH India is going to happen. Which is why I'm here in Bombay. We basically had a guild with Polygon where we were speaking and Polygon was speaking. And now we are going to Bangalore wherein we'll wrap up this Polygon guild and then ETH India starts, wherein we'll be there giving our API access and everything out to these hackers who will come and build cool things. So definitely just keep an eye out at all the hackathons that ETH India hosted. I think they hosted around 16 hackathons this year round. So definitely you'll find something that is close to your location and just go out and build on that. Or otherwise, if you don't want to, you can just do it online as well. They do have online hackathons also.
That's fantastic. I'll definitely have to look into that. ETH Global, and they've got so many other local things going on as well. Let's talk about Web3 in India, because if we look at who the biggest winners are, you know, 5, 10, 20 years down the road, it's hard to say that India itself is not going to be the biggest winner from the evolution of crypto and Web3. Just what kind of impact do you foresee it having on the average daily life there in India?
Got it. I mean, India is like, there's this joke I crack, like whenever or wherever in we as Indians, we come in numbers. So yeah, India, and when it comes to Web3, it's a very hot market over here. A lot of Web3 builders, like India has been very tech oriented anyway. So the jump from Web2 to Web3 is a bit easy. And a lot of blockchains, they are targeting India because they kind of realize the potential India has. And that's why India has been becoming a very good hotspot for getting all the talents. When it comes to the Web3 and the impact it has on Indians, so one thing the Web3 did was that with the advent of Web3, a lot of Indian entrepreneurs, they started coming into the global limelight. Like one of the projects that we probably know about is Polygon. That's an Indian project that started from India. Of course, there is Push, that's us. But other than that, there are a lot of other projects also that are coming up or that are competing with global products. So that's something which has which India has seen, which is a drastic change from the Web2 world. In the Web2 world, Indians were not seen as entrepreneurs as much as intellectuals who solved a problem or for the service-oriented industry. But with Web3, what we are seeing is like Indians are leading in entrepreneurship and innovation. So yeah, that to me is one of the biggest things that I've seen in India Web3 ecosystem.
In the Indian culture, is there any preference towards using products and services that were built in India?
I mean, yes and no. I think Indians, they kind of gravitate towards whether service is good enough or not, which is the reason why basically Amazon does relatively well in India than one of the local starters. But at the same time, Netflix performs poorly in India. So I think if something is Indian made, it does have the advantage that people will try it out. But eventually, people will only stick to a product or a service that is outperforming. So in terms of shopping, Amazon outperformed a local Indian startup. And that's why they are leading now, even when the local Indian startup started early. And in terms of Netflix versus the other platform, the other platform basically started after Netflix, but they were doing well or they were offering services well. And that's why they are here. So I would say that being an Indian founder or an Indian product will make Indians try your product out for sure. But they will only go for the product that they like and the product that they find satisfies their needs.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But that's cool that they're at least willing to try it if it's local.
Yes.
That's a huge leg up on many other places and regions in the world. So that's awesome to know. You know, who's one person in this space that's really inspired you to continue doing what you do? You mentioned Mariano Conti already. From Maker was a huge, you know, partner with you over there at Push. Who else that you want to give a shout out to?
Got it. I mean, there's so many that have helped us, but I think Balaji. Balaji is also an investor.
Yeah.
And he's one of the sharpest minds we have met. I would also say DeFi Dad. Like, I really love DeFi Dad. He's also an investor and a friend now. And to an extent, almost all of the Ethereum Web3 leaders I've met, including like Dan Finley or Kevin Owaki or Simona Pop or The Graph or Yane from The Graph, or I mean, countless others, like Austin Griffith or Anthony Sassano or Sandeep. From Polygon. I mean, all of them, they have kind of helped us a ton in getting to where we are. So I would say that's why I say like the Ethereum community is really, really awesome. But shout out to all of them. Apart from that, even shout out to all the VCs that have been super helpful and that have backed us. So VCs like Tiger Global or Parafi or A Capital or around 40 or so VCs that have backed us up. They have always helped us in one part or the other. So shout out to all of them and shout out to especially some of the VCs or people that I might have missed. So, yeah.
I think it's so beautiful that in the traditional world where you're really struggling and trying to take an edge and, you know, maybe you can count on one hand how many people have helped you along the way versus tried to just take from you. But in Web3, there's just an overwhelming network of collaboration and people that want to help make things better. The Web3 world is definitely going to be a lot more beautiful than what we all grew up on. And the people who are born into Web3 and are raised from day one with that spirit of collaboration rather than competition are one day going to be in charge of the world. And I'm very, very excited for those days that lie ahead of us.
Yep.
For people who are listening, go ahead.
So I was saying, like, I think the beauty of Web3 is composability. And a lot of people, they embrace that idea that they want to be composable. So you don't want to reinvent the wheel. You definitely want to help the other person out. You basically are building for a better future of tech instead of the better future of your company, which is something which I really like about Web3, because it's not about your company's survival. It's about the community. It's about how a product will survive rather than how your company will survive, which I think is the biggest differentiator between a Web2 and a Web3 company.
Yeah, it really doesn't matter if anything we're building today is here 100 or 150 years from now. It's just about moving the world forward.
Yes.
And that's great because there's no scarcity in Web3 other than maybe Solidity developers. But yes. Everyone has time, and everyone's got some airline miles, hopefully, that they can go to one of these hackathons and meetups and make new friends. And yeah, it's really great. You know, if someone's listening to this podcast for the first time, as they're just now, you know, reading about crypto and just, you know, wanting to get in now that prices are, you know, rock bottom lows for this market cycle, and they see all this bad news and things collapsing around them, and, you know, this trusted guy is a scammer and that thing's falling apart. You know, what would you say to anyone who's wanting to get into crypto right now?
Oh, wow. So I have so many opinions on this. Like, first of all,
let them loose.
Awesome. So first of all, like, the bad news in crypto that we are going through, like the collapse of FTX, that basically what people have pinned it down to is that crypto caused all of this. In actual words, that is not true. What caused all of it was our trust and our reliance on centralized things. And that was one of the things that motivated us to create a decentralized communication protocol. Like, we don't want the world where the app controls your data and the app controls your communication. So Facebook can send you anything and Facebook can project you anything. And there is no way for you to verify that this is real or not real. And in a way, that was the same thing that happened with these exchanges as well. These exchanges, they provided you the gateway to get crypto, but they provide you in a centralized fashion. And I think after so many, like, I think exchanges, the type of exchanges collapse, they're very synonymous to the bank collapse that we have seen, wherein you have a centralized entity. All of a sudden, you know, you find out that you have been cheated. So, yeah, I would say, like, crypto is suffering because of centralization, but it's the blame for it is going to crypto directly. I think exchanges, they need to be held accountable. I know the UX and users, they don't want to learn a lot when it comes to buying into crypto, at least at the very first point of time. So they prefer these exchanges. But at the very least, I think what Vitalik has suggested very recently, he worked on it with Balaji and Kraken and other exchanges to come up with a proof of reserve protocol. I think exchanges need to adopt that. That is one thing I think will probably save a lot of these disasters. I also think that users, they need to move away from exchanges whenever they think they're ready. Because exchanges are just, I mean, not many people realize, but exchanges are basically just a centralized way of owning crypto. And crypto, by its very nature, was made to say that, hey, we are decentralized. You don't have to trust us. Like, you don't have to trust the money. It doesn't matter whether any government is saying that, or any big bank is saying that, or Google is saying that, or Apple is saying that, or Microsoft is saying that. Crypto, the vision was that math is saying that this is right and this is wrong. And that math will be valid no matter you run it or I run it or anyone else run it. And exchanges, they basically kind of went through that same concentration of power, because people still have to learn, and Web3's UX still has to improve a lot. So people kind of wanted to come into the same thing, and exchanges provided them that. But I would say, like, these exchanges, they kind of need to behave more like Web3, kind of need to have some sort of proof, some sort of on-chain proof at the very least, if they're not going into the decentralized exchange part as well, at least for the short term, for this to not happen again and again. It basically brings a very bad name to the industry, and in a way, the industry is not really responsible for that, because this is what the industry wants to eliminate by the likes of Uniswap and by the likes of DEXs, wherein there's no trust between anyone, even when you are trading. Everything is trustless. Everything is mathematical. So yeah, I would say it's a bad phase that we have right now. Of course, it will pass, but it will take some time for people to start trusting crypto again. Of course, it will trigger some unwanted attention to the industry. It will also trigger some unfair regulations, again, because people don't understand the concept behind centralized exchanges and crypto and why it's completely different. So yeah, I think as an industry whole, we should start, or we should try to be more transparent. We should try to be more user-friendly, and we should try to hold ourselves to high standards, because if we don't do that, the faith of the users, they will go away, and then it becomes harder to regain that faith. I am not saying that it will not happen. I mean, all the good projects are here to stay. But I think what it does is it basically sets back the industry a couple of years, just because, you know, someone thought that they can make a quick money and exit. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really important to remind our listeners that crypto is all about building trustless networks, like you mentioned. And what went wrong here is we trusted somebody, which is the exact thing that crypto is being built to get away from. Because even if you have good people that are running good companies, eventually they're going to retire, or the company is going to get sold and bought. And the next person who may come in may run into the ground, or may be a bad actor. And just getting away from that entire framework of running a company and doing business is why we're building in crypto in the first place. So while in the short term, yeah, it does kind of shine a bad light on this industry, I think if people stop to think about it for a second, they'll realize, hey, actually, this further proves the case of crypto itself and all these decentralized networks. It just goes to show, even the best guy out there who's getting all the attention, who seems like he can't miss, is still doomed to fail. But even in all that, these decentralized networks still held up strong. The ones that have been here to withstand the test of time, like Maker and Compound, Ethereum and whatnot. So Bitcoin, of course, kept on rolling as it always does. It doesn't have any messaging to know what's going on in the news. So, yeah, it's great. So, Harsh, thank you so much for spending the last half hour with us. It was great to pick your brain. Thank you so much for everything you've built over there at Push Protocol. I'm sure all of us listening will be using it at some point. And if we have any more questions about getting into the industry as a builder or anything, you know, where can we follow you for more crypto
information. And Twitter, they go hand on hand, at least till the time Twitter operates. So you can follow me at Harsh Rajat, HARSH RAJAT. Just tag me in case you need any help. In case you want to learn about Push, just go to push.org and you can see all the things that we are doing. And through that, you can go through the protocol Twitter handle as well. Also, thanks Pizza Mind for having me. I really loved this podcast. It was one of the most one of the more interesting ones that I had recently. So yeah.
Well, we really appreciate you coming on, and we can't wait to bring you back. There's a lot of things we're going to do together to build Web3 into an even better world. So thanks so much for being here. Push Protocol, everyone. Go check it out. And we'll be back later in the week with another great podcast here at Crypto 101.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.